Now a logo appears in bold slanting letters over a green planet in space. Turner. In a black and white film, a shield appears inscribed with the capital letters WB. Warner Brothers Pictures presents Bette Davis as Charlotte Vale and Paul Henry as Jerry Durrance in Now Voyager. This film is described for blind and visually impaired audiences by descriptive video service WGBH Boston. Described by Michael Braden and Samantha Manahan. Read by Paul Horn. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. More titles with Claude Rains, Gladys Cooper, Bonita Granville, John Loder, Ilka Chase, Lee Patrick, Franklin Pangborn, Catherine Alexander, James Rennie, and Mary Wicks. Screenplay by Casey Robinson from the novel by Olive Higgins Prouty. Director of Photography Saul Polito, ASC. Film Editor Warren Lowe. Sound by Robert B. Lee. Art Director Robert Haas. Gowns by Ori Kelly. Musical Director Leo F. Forbstein. Copyright 1942, Warner Brothers Pictures. Music by Max Steiner. A Hal B. Wallace production. Directed by Irving Rapper. Now a rainy day. A statue of a black jockey stands in the driveway of a posh urban manor. Carved into the base of the statue is the name Vale. Inside, an anxious maidservant scurries into the front hall past another, who sweeps a grand staircase. A balding butler steps downstairs.
She's coming down.
The maidservant hurries off as the white-haired Mrs. Vale steps downstairs.
William?
Yes, ma'am?
Has my daughter-in-law telephoned?
Mrs. B's a phone. She'll be here at 4 o'clock, ma'am.
4 o'clock now. We'll be pouring tea in the drawing room this afternoon.
Very good, ma'am.
Mrs. Leeser is bringing someone with her.
Yes, ma'am.
Show them in here.
Very good, ma'am.
And please tell Miss Charlotte to be down in 10 minutes.
Yes, ma'am.
Frowning, she eyes a tea cart.
William, how many times must I tell you not to have the table here at this time of day?
Sorry, ma'am.
What's that noise?
In the front hall, a man taps his pipe into a vase.
Whoever is doing that will kindly stop.
I imagine whoever said that.
Yes, that's Mother. I'll go ahead and smooth the path.
He taps his ashes into his hand, then puts them on William's silver tray.
Messy things, pipes. I like them.
Your coat, sir?
Oh, yes, yes. Thank you.
He takes off his coat.
This way, please.
Thank you.
He steps into the drawing room.
But surely there can be no possible harm in just talking. I thought that we... this is Dr. Jack with my mother-in-law, Mrs. Henry Wendell Vale.
How do you do?
I will not pretend, Dr. Jackwith, you've been brought here with my approval. No matter what Lisa may have told you, my daughter Charlotte is no more ill than a molting canary.
Well, that's what we hope he's come to confirm. Mother's disapproval isn't personal, Doctor. Please sit down, won't you?
Thank you.
The doctor sits.
The last member of your profession I consulted warned me my heart would be the finish of me. The fact I've outlived him for 15 years has not increased my meager trust of the pack of you.
A highly sensible reaction.
Well, darling, please try to relax your grim disapproval where this doctor is concerned. Really, you know, we're honored by the visit of the foremost psychiatrist of the whole country. And I might add, I think it was pretty sweet of him to come all the way from New York to Boston. Generally, he doesn't come to see people, they go to see him.
It wouldn't hurt if you also added that that's from lack of time, not from vanity.
Oh, and Mother, before I forget it, please don't call him Dr. Jackwith in front of Charlotte.
That's his name, isn't it?
Well, yes, but forget the doctor. Make it Mister. Charlotte will shut up like a clam if she suspects we've trapped her into an examination. So please try to cooperate, won't you?
I've already sent for Charlotte. My little girl will be here directly.
Miss Charlotte?
Upstairs.
Your mother's waiting in the downstairs drawing room.
In her bedroom, we see Charlotte's slender hands delicately carving an ivory box. The long sleeves of her white polka-dotted black dress cover her arms. She sets her chisel down, snubs out her cigarette on a china saucer, then dumps the ashes into a wastebasket. After hiding the saucer in a drawer, she throws a lipstick-smudged tissue away and plods quietly downstairs.
Is it facts about my daughter you want, or Lisa's fancies?
Oh, just anything interesting.
Charlotte was a late child. There were three boys, then after a long time, this girl. A child of my old age, I've always called her. I was well into my 40s. And her father passed on soon after she was born. My ugly duckling. Of course, it's true that all late children are marked.
Often such children aren't wanted. That can mark them.
I've kept her close by me always. When she was young, foolish, I made decisions for her. Always the right decisions. One would think a child would wish to repay a mother's love and kindness.
Oh, there you are, Charlotte. I'm so glad to see you.
Lisa holds out her arms to Charlotte, a frumpy woman in her 30s.
Hello, dear.
They press their cheeks together.
Oh, this is my very good friend, Mr. Jackwith. I ran into him on the street and brought him by for tea. I thought Mother would be pleased, and I hoped you would be, too.
How do you do, Miss Vale?
Charlotte clenches her hands.
Well, has the cat got your tongue, Charlotte?
Through her wire-rimmed glasses, the homely spinster looks grimly at her mother, then sits down. Charlotte wears her hair parted in the center and pulled back in a bun.
I apologize for my daughter's bad manners, Doctor.
Charlotte eyes him in shock.
Mother, please.
I will not countenance deceit these against one of my own flesh and blood, but neither will I countenance any more of Charlotte's nonsense. Lisa tells me that your latest peculiarities, your fits of crying, your secretiveness, indicate you're on the verge of a nervous breakdown. Is that what you're trying to achieve?
Charlotte, dear, believe me, I was only trying to help you.
Dr. Jackwith has a sanitarium in Vermont, I believe. Probably one of those places with a high wire fence and yowling inmates.
Well, no, I wouldn't want anyone to have that mistaken notion. Cascade is just a place in the country. People come to it when they're tired. You go to the seashore, they come there.
The very word psychiatry, Dr. Jackwith. Doesn't it fill you with shame? My daughter, a member of our family.
There's nothing shameful about my work or frightening or anything else. It's very simple, really, what I try to do. People walk along a road. They come to a fork in the road. They're confused. They don't know which way to take. I just put up a signpost. Not that way. This way.
Charlotte's shifting gaze grows frantic. With her shoulders hunched and her arms drawn close to her body, she rushes out. Dr. Jackwith follows.
Really, Mother?
Excuse me. Miss Vale, please wait.
The poised, stone-faced Mrs. Vale clenches her fingers.
Miss Vale. I wonder if I might ask you a favor. Would you be nice and show me around this house? One doesn't often get the chance.
He follows her upstairs.
Yes, that's right. I had a look at the downstairs when I came in. You know, there's nothing like these old Boston homes anywhere. Beyond Marlborough Street or Beacon Hill, you see them standing in a row like bastions. Firm, proud, resisting the new. Houses turned in upon themselves, hugging their pride.
Introverted doctor.
He knits his brow.
Well, I wouldn't know about that. I don't put much faith in scientific terms. I leave that to the fakers and the writers of books.
He stands in the doorway of an elegant room with a four-poster canopy bed.
That's the room where I was born. My mother's room.
Fine room.
Do you think so?
Of course, I'd prefer to see what your room is like. Is it nearby?
I'm not your patient yet, doctor.
Well, now, nobody thinks you ever will be. I've seen the rooms of lots of people who aren't my patients. My friends. Of course, if you don't want to.
It's on the floor above.
Stepping reservedly, she leads him upstairs. She pauses.
When I was 17, I came in once after midnight. The tread hasn't been fixed since.
Taking a key from the front pocket of her dowdy dress, she approaches a closed door.
She locks her door, doctor. Make a note of it. Significant, isn't it?
Well, it signifies that it's your door. I never heard it said that a woman's home is not her castle.
She opens the door. Her thick eyebrows frame her somber eyes.
My castle, doctor.
He enters her neat, spacious bedroom, glances at the fine furniture, and pats one of the tall wooden posts of her bed.
You know, stuff like this was built to last a lifetime. Solid.
Enduring and inescapable.
You comfortable here?
I try to be. I'm here a good part of the time.
Why, what's this?
At a table, he admires several carved ivory boxes.
Did you do these?
Why shouldn't I?
Well, the point is how you could. They're really professional. Do you mind if I look at them?
She smiles faintly.
No, I don't mind. They aren't very difficult. I get the raw ivory from New York, and I have the tools. Just a matter of the doing.
And the skill. You know, this is very good detail. I have a great admiration for people who are clever with their hands. I was always so clumsy with my own.
I should think you were the least clumsy person I'd ever met.
This is excellent.
He studies a box's intricate detail.
You may have one if you like.
May I? Anyone?
Of course. All except this one. When I was working on it, my mother sent for me. The chisel slipped.
They did ruin such a nice box.
Yes. I'll get you something to wrap it in.
Oh, don't bother. Well, then, any old piece of paper will do.
At her desk, she holds a photo album and aims a guarded look at Dr. Jackwith, who stares at the cigarette butts in the wastebasket.
You don't happen to have a cigarette hidden away someplace? I seem to have left my tobacco in my coat downstairs.
Do you think I hide cigarettes in my room, Doctor?
No.
Where do I hide them, Doctor? On the shelves behind the books? Cigarettes and medicated sherry in books my mother won't allow me to read? Whole secret life hidden up here behind a locked door?
Please. It was only the box that reminded me.
How very perceiving you are, Doctor. How very right you are. And see, I was just about to hide this album. You know, you really should read it. It's a shame for you to come all the way up here and miss your amusement. Read it, Doctor. The intimate journal of Miss Charlotte Dale, spinster.
Well, anything conventional that I don't wish to pry.
But you must pry. I insist that you do. There's really nothing to frighten you off. A few snapshots, a memento or two. It's a record of my last trip abroad with my mother. We were sailing up the coast of Africa. See, there's a picture of our ship, a P&O steamer. You wouldn't have known me then. I was 20 then.
The turning pages of the album dissolve into a flashback of a young, pretty Charlotte. On a steamship's deck, she passionately kisses a handsome ship officer.
Oh, I say, that was a scorcher.
They exchange an enamored gaze, draw their lips close, then hesitate. Sliding his hand slowly off her shoulder, he drops his gaze.
Leslie, you act so funny. Do I? I thought that men didn't like girls who were prudes.
Oh, you're gorgeous, Charlotte. Come on, give us another. Oh, eyes open. There's the first mate. He'll be looking for me. There's always a mess of work just before we dock.
Are you going ashore tonight?
Are we, pet?
Darling, if I can't go, you won't, will you? Not even if that girl from New York does.
Not likely. There's nothing like you to be found in all of Africa. There he is again. I'd better hop to it.
He puts on his white cap.
Leslie.
Yes?
Come here.
Charlotte presses her hand against his lips.
Darling. Dearest darling.
He pulls her into a soft kiss, then strides off. She smiles, picks up her book and purse, and meanders along the deck.
I had read that part in novels about men not liking girls to be prudes. That's all I had to go by, novels. Leslie told me he'd rather have me than any girl on board, or any girl he'd ever known, because I was so responsive. He said that the others were like silly schoolgirls compared to my lovemaking.
Later, she enters a posh lounge where her mother sits at a writing table. Mrs. Vale looks sourly at Charlotte.
Why aren't you wearing your glasses?
Oh, they're in my bag. Mother, they're so unattractive. Other girls...
Put them on. You'll never get another pair of eyes, my dear. What's that book?
Marconi. Wireless. I'm studying it.
From whom are you learning about wireless?
Mr. Trotter lent me the book.
You mean the wireless officer?
Yes. Mother, are we taking the shore trip tonight?
No, Charlotte, I think not.
Then could I go alone? Oh, I don't mean really alone. I ran to the ship's hostess and she said they were organizing groups and I said I'd ask you.
Could we try to remember that we're hardly commercial travelers? Bad enough to have to associate with these tourists on board without having to go ashore with them. You have all the vigor of the typical American tourist. Charlotte, sit down and write something to someone. For the last 3 days, you've been behaving like an excited servant girl.
Charlotte frowns in disappointment and sits across from her mother.
That night, I left her in her room with one of her headaches. I would go to the library and read. And later, when she looked for me, I wasn't there. She couldn't know I was with Leslie. But she knew I hadn't gone ashore. She checked on that. Leslie and I always had to be discreet. Not only because of Mother, but because of his position on the ship as well. One of our favorite trysting places was on the freight deck, among the crates and canvas-covered automobiles. There was a particular limousine.
Mrs. Vale and the captain search the dark ship with a flashlight. In the limousine, they find Leslie and Charlotte kissing.
Come out at once.
Trotter,
Charlotte, wearing a soft floral dress, steps out behind Leslie.
I don't care. I'm glad. Go to your cabin.
I want to marry your daughter. We're engaged to be married.
Do you allow what you call your officers to address a passenger in that manner?
You'll report to my quarters at once, Trotter.
Leslie glances at Charlotte, then leaves.
Go to your cabin.
Charlotte stares after Leslie, then walks away, ignoring her mother's searing gaze.
I had said I was glad, and I was glad. He had defied my mother and placed me on a throne, and before a witness, too. It was the proudest moment of my life. My moment didn't last long, as you can see. My mother didn't think that Leslie was suitable for a veil of Boston. What man is suitable, Doctor? She's never found one. What man would ever look at me and say, I want you? I'm fat. My mother doesn't approve of dieting. Look at my shoes. My mother approves of sensible shoes. Look at the books on my shelves. My mother approves of good, solid books. I am my mother's well-loved daughter. I am her companion. I am my mother's servant. My mother says, my mother, my mother, my mother!
She leans her bowed head against the window. Raindrops cascade down the latticed panes. Dr. Jackwith picks up her fallen eyeglasses.
You'll never get another pair of eyes, as your mother says, if you spoil them with tears.
Oh, Dr. Jackwith, can you help me?
Help you?
When you were talking downstairs, when you were talking about the fork in the road, there are other forks further along the road. So many.
You don't need my help.
Tears stream down her face.
Here are your glasses. Put away your book and come downstairs. I'll go ahead.
Her watery gaze follows him across the room. He stops at the table, takes his ivory box, and smiles.
Thank you again for this.
She rests her head against the rain-streaked window. In the drawing room, Dr. Jackwith rejoins Lisa and Mrs. Vale.
Well, it's as I said, isn't it? Just nonsense.
She is most seriously ill.
Charlotte is?
Thanks to you.
Did you say...
My dear Mrs. Vale, if you had deliberately and maliciously planned to destroy your daughter's life, you couldn't have done it more completely.
How? By having exercised a mother's rights?
A mother's rights, twaddle. A child has rights. A person has rights. To discover her own mistakes, to make her own way, to grow and blossom in her own particular soil.
Are we getting into botany, Doctor? Are we flowers?
A young blonde at the door.
Hello, William. Gloomy William.
Good afternoon.
You know, I've been thinking, you should get yourself a top piece. One like Mrs. Vincent Adams has put on her Charles.
It's a project worth considering. I myself have been worried.
Black, I think, or, well, maybe red. Anyway, we'll think about it. Oh, hello, Aunt Charlotte.
Hello, June.
You look ravishing. New dress?
June eyes her mockingly.
No, June. Well, anyway, it's devastating. Aunt Charlotte, do you think even at our age we should wear our skirts so short?
June, mind your manners.
Hello, Grandma. Why are you always late?
I'm sorry.
Charlotte, will you pour tea?
Hello, dear. Will you have tea with us?
Tea? I'm heading for cocktails later.
No.
Who's this?
This is Dr. Jackwith.
And I'm June. You've heard about us, June and December.
My infant.
What's that?
June notices the doctor's ivory box.
Oh, don't tell me Charlotte gave it to you.
June?
One of her own precious private. Why, Aunt Charlotte, fess up, a romance. Isn't this something to be discussed with the family?
June, will you please?
What's this? A hangover, I believe it is. And Charlotte's got the shakes.
Go on, torture me. Go on, torture me. You like making fun of me, don't you? You think it's fun making fun of me, don't you?
Charlotte rushes out. Lisa glares at June.
Nice work, infant.
I didn't mean... We've always ragged Aunt Charlotte. It was just a game.
A nervous breakdown. No member of the Vale family has ever had a nervous breakdown.
Well, there's one having one now. I suggest a few weeks at Cascade.
Now a sunny day at the Cascade Sanitarium. The spacious retreat is nestled in wooded hills. Patients saunter across the well-trimmed grounds. A sedan pulls up. The tall, fashionably dressed Lisa steps out and waves to Dr. Jackwith.
There
There you are, Lisa. I've been waiting for you.
Hello, Dr. Jackson.
You're looking lovelier than ever.
Oh, thank
it's good
you.
To see you again.
I'm sorry I'm late, but we lost our way a bit. Tell me, how is Charlotte?
Better every week. Oh, in fact, good. She's almost well, but she doesn't believe it. The prospect still looks dark to her. Going through a sickness like hers is something like going through a tunnel. It's pretty dark right up the last few hundred yards. You'll find her feeling depressed today because only this morning I told her she's a fledgling now.
A fledgling?
Well, it's time for her to get out of the nest and try her own wings. The contemplation of going home has struck her pretty hard. I haven't told her yet there's any alternative.
Then you think well of my alternative.
It's a gift from heaven, but we won't tell her about your plan till after you've gone. Now, don't expect to find her looking well. She's lost a lot of weight. She's a pretty sick girl, you know.
Inside a cottage, Charlotte sits at a weaving loom, working intently. She wears a plain dress with a starched white collar. Dr. Jackwith and Lisa enter.
Charlotte, darling, I'm so glad to see you. Dr. Jackwith says you're much better, almost well.
Yes, that's what he says.
Lisa, this is Miss Trask, Mrs. Vale.
How do you do?
Miss Trask is chief of my police force here.
What's this? I've been helping Miss Vale with her weaving. Now you've come, if you'll excuse me. I have a million things to do.
He takes off Charlotte's glasses.
The oculist told you don't need these anymore.
But I feel so undressed without them.
It's good for you to feel that way.
She looks dubiously at the doctor as he breaks her glasses in half.
How's Mama?
Fine. She's having a wonderful time paying visits to all her children. Spending a month with me at present.
Has Dr. Jackwith told you?
Told me what?
He says I'm well enough to leave here now. Got to go home. Lisa, I dread it so terribly. I know it's awful not to want to see Mother, and it's wrong.
Stop, look, and listen. New England conscience on the track.
Perhaps you don't have to go home. Mayn't I tell her?
Later, maybe. We'll see how she behaves. We have a scheme, your relative and I.
What is it?
I'm not telling you yet. Marvelous chance, though, to use your re-education. Well, my time for pleasure is just about up. I thought I'd show Lisa around the place a little. Then you can show the rest of the works when we get back. Leave me outside in a minute.
Oh, I've been thrown out of better places than this, Doctor.
Lisa steps out of the room. Smiling gently, the doctor sits down next to Charlotte.
This morning, Charlotte, during your office appointment with me, I referred to a quotation, remember?
Oh, yes, Walt Whitman's.
Well, I had it looked up and typed out on a strip of paper for you. If old Walt didn't have you in mind when he wrote this, he had lots of others like you. He's put into words what I'd like to say to you now, and far better than I could ever express it.
He hands her a paper.
Read it. Bye.
He leaves.
Bye.
She reads the typewritten page.
Untold want by life and land near granted. Now, voyager, sail thou forth to seek and find.
Charlotte's gaze shifts in thought. Now, on the sunlit ocean, seagulls soar over the rolling, foamy wake of a steamship. Later, passengers debark the anchored ocean liner and board a smaller tender ferry. On the ferry's deck, a mustache cruise director strolls amid the bustling passengers.
Hey, don't worry, we'll be on our way in a short while.
Mr. Thompson, the others have all gone. This is the last tender.
Don't be impatient. We'll all be ashore in a minute.
What are we waiting for?
Why, Miss Beauchamp, she said...
Well, she hasn't stuck her nose out of her cabin since we left New York.
I caught a glimpse of her once. Just a glimpse. I think she's been ill. She looks pale, but interesting.
She'd be much more interesting if she wouldn't hold us up.
Shh, here she is.
A slender, made-over Charlotte pauses in the steamship's gangway. She wears a stylish trim suit, high heels, and white gloves. A delicate veil hangs from her wide-brimmed hat, concealing her face. As she steps down, Mr. Thompson meets her.
Ah, oh, Miss Beauchamp, here you are. We've been waiting for you.
I'm sorry.
She boards the 100-foot tender ferry, and it motors toward shore. Later, Mr. Thompson and a tall, handsome man in his 40s approach her on deck.
Miss Beauchamp. Miss Beauchamp, allow me to introduce Mr. Dorrance.
How do you do?
I've just been checking over our shore vehicles, and there seems to be only one left. Would you be so kind as to share your carriage with this gentleman?
Really?
That's splendid of you, Miss Beauchamp, splendid. You're traveling alone, and he's traveling alone, and so that's splendid. Splendid.
Mr. Thompson leaves.
I know it's an inconvenience. If it's too much, just say so.
She stares distantly and remembers Dr. Jackwith seeing her off.
Now, pull your own weight. I've taught you the technique. Use it. Forget you're a hidebound New Englander. Unbend. Take part. Contribute. Be interested in everything. And everybody.
The present.
You sure you don't mind?
Of course not. I should be able to stand it if you can.
Are you a typical tourist? I am. Not that you wouldn't know, but I say it's foolish not to be if you're going to see something you haven't seen before. I want to see everything. A queen's staircase. Why are you smiling?
I was thinking of my mother.
Oh, your mother?
We try to remember that we're hardly commercial travelers. It's bad enough to have to associate with these tourists on board.
I'll be glad to see anything you like.
Thank you. You're a good sport.
On shore, a horse-drawn carriage passes an outdoor garden cafe which overlooks the sea. At a table surrounded by flowering bushes, Charlotte sits with Mr. Durrance.
The barb all right?
Yes, thank you. Excellent.
Good. Would you excuse me long enough to send a cable? I promised my wife. I should have sent it this morning. Isabel gets nervous.
Of course. You must send it at once.
Here, while I'm gone.
He offers her a cigarette. Charlotte hesitates a moment, then takes one. As he shields his lighter from the wind, Charlotte dips her cigarette in the flame, then exhales a stream of smoke. He gazes keenly at her.
I wish I understood you.
Since we just met this morning, how could you possibly?
But I won't be long.
She watches him leave, then shifts her gaze in thought.
He wishes he understood me.
Solemnly, she studies her reflection in a window. Eyeing her rouged lips and finely curved eyebrows, she touches her hair, which is swept gracefully up beneath her hat.
He wishes.
Later, he returns.
Well, that's done. Miss Bonchon, I've taken the liberty of ordering us Cointreaux. You know, you're quite different from what I expected.
How am I different?
You're so much more comfortable to talk to, Miss Bonchon. So
please
much...
listen. I'm not Miss Bonchon. Renee is in Arizona somewhere.
But this morning the cruise manager introduced...
I know. The head waiter and the deck steward, they all think I'm Miss Beauchamp. The purser knows I'm not. I took Renee's space at the last moment, and it was too late for my name to go on the first passenger list.
Do you intend to keep your identity a dark secret for the whole voyage?
No, I would have corrected the mistake earlier. Only there was such a crowd, it would have been awkward, and I don't know why I'm telling you all this. A stranger.
I'm awfully sorry. My name is Durrance. Jeremiah DeVoe Durrance. Silly name, isn't it? My father named me after a professor he was fond of. I was J.D. in college. My wife calls me J. DeVoe. But I'm Jerry to my friends. And now, won't you tell me who you are?
My name is Vale. V-A-L-E. If it ever appears on the passenger list, it will be C. Vale, Boston, Massachusetts.
Are you one of the Vales of Boston?
One of the lesser ones.
Well, which one? I don't even know yet whether it's Miss or Mrs.
It's Aunt. Every family has one, you know.
But Aunt what?
My name is Charlotte Vale. Miss Charlotte Vale.
Her gaze drops uncomfortably.
Please, let's go.
She leaves in haste. Puzzled, Jerry watches her go, then pays the check. On a footpath by the sea, Charlotte strolls past palm trees and flower gardens. Jerry catches up with her.
Miss Vale, I hope I didn't offend you. It's like me to blunder just when I was going to ask you for a favor this afternoon. I have some shopping to do for my daughters. Well, I need a woman's help.
Of course. A spinster aunt is an ideal person to select presents for young girls.
At dusk, Charlotte and Jerry sit on the ferry's deck.
I think we did darn well. The jewelry is just right for Beatrice. At 16, they get the urge for glamour. And the sweater for Tina.
How old is Tina?
Here. I'll show you.
He takes out a wallet photo.
My harem.
Who is that knitting?
That's Isabel, my wife. The picture isn't very good of her. She'd only looked up and smiled. That's Beatrice next to her.
Then that must be Tina sitting cross-legged on the grass.
We hope she won't have to wear glasses all her life. Tina wouldn't smile for me either. She's convinced she's an ugly duckling.
Does Tina know she wasn't wanted?
There's an odd remark.
I don't know why I made it.
I mean, odd because it hits so close to the truth. Even before she was born, her mother said. But never mind that. Here... is a slight offering.
He holds out a gift.
For being my guide today.
It's a mixture of several kinds of flowers. It's called jolie fleur.
He puts it in her lap, and she gazes soulfully at the gift wrap box. Standing, Jerry gathers his other gifts.
Thank you very much.
Her softly curled bangs frame her delicate features.
I'll put some on my handkerchief tonight.
Will you? Good. Oh, let's meet in the bar for a cocktail before dinner.
Later on the steamship, Charlotte steps into her dark cabin and flicks on a light. She tosses her hat and purse on a chair and sets the jar of jolie fleur on her makeup table. Her lips curl into a faint smile as she gazes at her gift. Pulling off her white gloves, she hurries across the room, takes a long, flowing white dress out of the closet, and sets it on the bed. She unpins a note from the front of the dress and reads.
Silver slippers and silver evening bag will be found in the accessory closet. Suppose she thought I'd wear Oxfords. Carry a shopping bag.
Later, wearing the elegant white dress and a silken cape draped around her shoulders, Charlotte scans the crowded cocktail lounge. At the bar, Jerry spots her in a mirror and hurries over.
I'm late, I know.
I hope you hadn't changed your mind.
Her uneasy gaze shifts around the room as Jerry escorts her to a table. He wears a black bow tie and a dashing white tuxedo jacket with a flower in the lapel.
What will you have?
I'll leave that to you.
What about bourbon old fashions?
A waiter nods.
Right. You have a cigarette?
She takes one from his silver case.
Thank you.
He strikes a match, lights her cigarette, then blows out the match. The waiter brings their old fashions.
You made a striking impression over there as you stood in a doorway looking for me.
Probably put on too much lipstick.
What did I notice?
He sips his drink.
But I did notice the rabbit ones. I don't pretend to know much, but I recognize the fritillaries when I see them.
Fritillaries?
A butterfly design on your coat. Butterflies are a hobby of mine, you know. Will you mind leaning forward? Those dark, slender lines coming over your shoulders must be your antennae. What's that?
What's what?
Something on your coat. Why, it's pinned on. Somebody must have been playing a joke on you, I guess.
Unpin it, please.
He unpins the note and hands it to her. She reads it and passes it back.
This should pigeonhole me for you, all right?
He reads it. Renee says this evening coat always makes an impression. She hopes it will do the same for you.
What does it mean? I can't make head or tail of it.
Means that this cape belongs to Renee Beauchamp. She lent it to me.
Oh, I see. Your wings are borrowed. Well, they suit you just the same.
No, they don't. They don't suit me at all. In fact, they're perfectly ridiculous. You're quite right, someone is playing a joke on me. Only it's far funnier than you realize.
You aren't going, are you? Well, J.D., Mag, and Deb, too, as I'm alive.
Hi. Oh,
these are my old friends, Deb McIntyre and Frank, and my new friend, Miss Beauchamp.
How do you do? How do you do? I'm so happy to know you.
Don't tell me this is the famous Beauchamp, the one who does the imitations.
No, no, another one altogether. This is Camille Beauchamp.
Oh, well, why don't we all go up to the club? We can have dinner, and we can dance.
I don't dance.
That lets me out, too. I don't dance either, according to my daughters.
How are Isabel and the kids?
Fine when I left.
Charlotte leaves.
I thought you were in Buenos Aires.
We liked it so well in Nassau, we stayed over. What are you doing down here?
Business, going to Rio.
I'm glad we joined the cruise.
Well, we'll see you later, J.D.
Of course, thanks.
Jerry rushes after Charlotte and finds her on deck.
Wait a minute. Why did you run out on me like that?
I'm tired. I think I'll have dinner in my cabin. Besides, you want to be with your friends.
There's something more.
Did you have to introduce me like that?
It wasn't up to me to let the cat out of the bag. Did I do wrong?
Well, it doesn't make my situation on this cruise any easier, I should say.
Then why didn't you stop me?
Why did you call me Camille?
Well, it was the only French name I could think of, besides Vivi.
Suppose that's meant to be funny.
My wife calls my lighter moments trying to be funny. So I don't blame you for feeling the same way. But I intended a compliment. In that dress, you're rather like a chameleon.
Likely.
You haven't a very high opinion of yourself, have you?
With glazed eyes, she shakes her head.
Perhaps this will help you know why. You showed me your album, I'll show you mine.
She shows him a photo.
Picture of my family.
Family is right. Your grandmother?
No, my mother.
Very strong character, I'd say. And these?
My brothers and their wives.
But they're so much older. Who is the fat lady with the heavy brows and all the hair?
He points to Charlotte.
A spinster aunt.
Where are you? Taking the picture?
I'm the fat lady with the heavy brows and all the hair. I'm poor Aunt Charlotte. And I've been ill. I've been in a sanitarium for 3 months. And I'm not well yet.
Hanging her head, she turns away from him. Jerry steps behind her and lays a comforting hand on her arm.
Forgive me.
She steps away, leans against the railing, and wipes her tears. He joins her.
Feeling better?
Much. Thanks to you. Oh, many, many thanks to you.
Thanks for what?
Oh, for sharing my carriage today and for walking my legs off sightseeing and for lunch and for shopping and for helping me feel that there were a few moments when I almost felt alive. Thank you.
Thank you who?
Thank you, Jerry. I must go in now.
Good night, Camille. Will you meet me for breakfast?
Yes.
Sleep well.
He shakes her hand.
Nice.
Watching her leave, Jerry smiles. Now a montage. Steam billows from the ship's smokestack. In the engine room, huge pistons pump. Our view of churning water dissolves to Charlotte's cabin. She sleeps restlessly in bed, tossing and turning. Our view drifts out her porthole. Moonlight beams through thin bands of shadowed clouds, spreading a glimmer across the gently rippling sea. In his cabin, a somber Jerry writes a letter to his daughter. It reads, Monday, the 12th. Dear Tina, I was sorry to see you in tears when I left, but Daddy understood. You were crying because you were being left alone. But today I made a discovery. All people are alone in some ways, and some people are alone in all ways. Even after someone has grown up, she can be alone. The next day, Jerry plays shuffleboard with his friends Frank and Deb McIntyre. In a nearby lounge chair, Charlotte knits.
Well, you were no help. That gives you 10 more. You won't win any 20 either.
I haven't heard Jerry laugh like that in years.
Really?
You're good for him. I'm exhausted.
Deb sits next to Charlotte.
Charlotte, how much has Jerry told you about his life at home?
He told me he was married. In fact, he showed me a snapshot of his family. He seemed very proud of them.
He would. Right out of the age of chivalry, that boy.
She takes a drink from a waiter.
Charlotte?
Oh, no, thank you.
Well, I can tell you there's not much joy in life for him at home. Honestly, when I see what a woman like Isabel can do to a man like Jerry, it makes me boil.
He doesn't have to stand it, does he?
A weak of great strength, you know, when they're clinging to something decent and fine. He's been cursed from the first day he met Isabel by a ruling passion not to hurt her.
Oh, there must be something more. He married her.
Propinquity, my dear, and propriety. Isabel was one of those pure, high-minded girls who believed that a kiss required a proposal of marriage. She's been about his neck ever since. Well, he struggled along at his architecture to get together enough money. And he had to give it up. Only thing he ever loved. Isabel kept reminding him he was now a married man with financial responsibilities. And almost immediately, she found she was going to have a child. She considered herself a great martyr, and she's played the martyr ever since. That's her grasp on him. Her martyrdom and her jealousy.
She can't have any reasons to be jealous.
If you mean does Jerry have flings with other women, no. But mostly she's jealous of Tina, the child she never wanted. Do you know that before Tina was born, Isabel actually went to a doctor and tried to get him to say her health wouldn't permit her to have a child. Yet if you could hear her sanctimonious maternal tone when she lets it leak out what a self-sacrificing mother she's been.
Jerry and Frank join them.
What are you two so thick about?
Oh, we're just being girls together. Who won?
They all brag.
We're getting into the harbor.
Jerry stands close to Charlotte. The McIntyres leave.
One of the few sights that doesn't disappoint you after the picture postcards.
What was Deb saying?
Oh, you know Deb. She was rattling on.
I want to know. How about me?
Yes, she was telling me about your life at home.
He looks away.
Oh.
She lays a hand warmly on his arm, then hesitates uneasily.
Jerry, you mustn't miss this moment. There's only one first sailing into Rio Harbor.
This is my getting off place. Your boat goes on in 3 days. Should I see you?
Not unless you pay more attention to your guide.
He smiles into her eyes.
Thank you.
There's Sugarloaf.
Oh, yes, it is. Sugarloaf.
A mountain.
That stretch of sand to the left is Copacabana Beach.
Copacabana. There's music in the word.
Up on that mountain, there's something to please your architect's heart. A crystal statue.
Gazing at a distant peak, they smile. On the summit stands a statue of Christ with his arms outstretched. In the highlands of Rio, a villager leads a burro down a paved mountain road. A sedan passes him as it slowly climbs the steep hill. Farther along the winding road, a soldier salutes the dark-haired mustache driver. Riding in the back seat, Jerry and Charlotte exchange nervous looks.
Serves me right for picking up a car just because I like to face off the driver instead of getting one from a regular tourist agent.
Don't worry, Jerry. It doesn't matter.
I promised Deb and Mac to meet them up there for dinner.
How much farther is it?
Giuseppe. Giuseppe?
Okay, mister. Don't look, just listen.
How far is it?
Oh, banana trees.
No, no. Distance, miles, kilometers. Combien distancio?
Oh, Corcovados, Pont de Azúcar, Joie, Parakeets, Birds, Parrots, Rubber.
Frowning, Jerry sits back.
Rubber.
I thought the card said English-spoken driver.
What he needs is a couple of Portuguese-spoken passengers.
Jerry, sit back. He knows where he's going.
Leaning back, Jerry sighs. Now Giuseppe turns right onto a narrow dirt road that winds up a steep mountainside. The ride gets bumpier.
Where are we going?
This must be the shortcut I told you about. Past the old church I wanted to see.
The road skirts a cliff that towers over a wooded valley. Rounding a bend, a sedan hugs the mountainside.
Are you sure this is the right way?
I'll bet he hasn't any more idea than we have. I'll make him turn around.
All you'll get is okay, senor, banana trees.
Giuseppe, turn the car around.
Okay, senor.
I told you.
Jerry sits back. His smile sours, and he leans forward again.
Giuseppe, stop, turn around, go back.
No good?
Turn around.
Jerry motions.
Go back. O senor, quer que volte?
Yeah, eh? I think so. Try it anyway.
Okay, senor.
Giuseppe rounds a sharp bend and stops. Putting the car in reverse, he backs quickly toward a gap in the trees at the edge of a cliff.
Stop!
Jerry shoots a panicked look at the driver.
Take it easy. Go forward.
Yes, forward.
Giuseppe bites his lip and jams the stick shift forward, putting the car in gear.
Forward!
The car rolls backward over the cliff and lands in the ditch. Giuseppe climbs out. He looks in the back seat.
Mister, please don't be dead.
Falling to his knees in prayer, he shakes his clasped hands at the sky. Jerry helps Charlotte out of the car.
All right.
I guess so.
Sure.
She nods, then hurries to the kneeling Giuseppe and pats his back.
Giuseppe, it's all right. Don't cry. Don't cry, Giuseppe.
He points to his wrecked car and clutches his head.
Giuseppe, listen.
Please, mister. Queria ir para frente, voy para atrás. Espérame aquí. Mi, por la embaixo conseguir un caballo y una corta.
All right.
I think he means he's going to get a horse and a rope.
No, Giuseppe, not cavallo e corda, not now. Giuseppe, go and get another automobile and chauffeur. Signorina must go Rio immediately. Catch big boat. Giuseppe, stay here when Signor and Signorina go Rio. Then, Giuseppe, get cavallo e corda and come Rio later. Comprendere?
Giuseppe shakes his head in confusion.
Jerry, haven't you got a piece of paper? Draw it out for him.
Right.
Jerry takes out a notebook. The driver watches him crudely sketch a steamship, then shrugs in puzzlement.
What's the word for tonight?
Draw the face of a clock.
Oh, yeah.
Jerry draws a clock and points to it.
Tonight. Esta noite. Big boat. Go. Depart.
Jerry swings his hands from side to side while Giuseppe throws his up and down.
Entendo, entendo.
Esta noche.
Entendo. Voy a buscar automóvil y volto ya. Goodbye, señorita y señor.
Giuseppe climbs the embankment and runs down the road. Nighttime in a downpour. On the floor of a cabin, Jerry and Charlotte sit closely.
You know, we're either going to have to bundle or freeze tonight.
They say that bundling is a New England custom both reverenced and honored.
Firelight casts flickering shadows across their faces as they gaze peacefully at the dancing flames. Later, the fire has burned down to embers, which spread a soft, dim light across the cabin. Using a coat as a blanket, Jerry and Charlotte sleep side by side. He lies on his back, with his suit jacket buttoned and his collar turned up. Pulling up his makeshift cover, Jerry blinks awake and glances at Charlotte, who sleeps soundly next to him. She wears her striped jacket buttoned at the neck and lies on her side with her arms folded across her chest. He pulls the coat over her arms to keep her warm and kisses her softly on the lips. Without waking, Charlotte nestles closer to him and stills. By the muted light of the dwindling fire, he watches her sleep. Daytime. In a small town, Jerry uses a payphone.
Thank you. Goodbye.
At an outdoor cafe across the street, Charlotte waits for him, touching up her makeup.
The tourist company is sending a car.
Oh, good.
The boat waited last night for 2 hours.
Did you wire Deb and Mac?
Yes, I did. You can rejoin your cruise in Buenos Aires. There's a plane going down there first thing in the morning.
There's another plane going down in 5 days. You'll get there the same day as your ship.
Oh.
Do you know anybody in Buenos Aires?
No.
Seems a shame to rush down there to spend 5 days alone.
But you'll be busy.
Oh, my business can wait. And we did start off on a tour.
We started off with somewhere.
If I promise to sit at a different table in a dining room and say, good morning, Miss Vale. I hope you slept well. So people will hear me and never guess that I'm head over heels in love with you. Don't say no, Camille. Say, I'll see.
I'll see.
Later, in downtown Rio, the sharply suited Jerry rides in an open carriage next to Charlotte, who wears a sun hat. She meets his amorous gaze with a smile, then looks at her lap. Later, in a restaurant, they sit at a table, watching couples on the dance floor.
May I have this dance?
Well, I'm afraid I don't know how to dance.
Try it. Just this once.
With an uncertain smile, she takes his hand and dances with him. Later, they walk along a footpath that overlooks the Rio Bay. Leaning on a railing, Charlotte looks at Sugarloaf Mountain. Jerry takes a picture. Nighttime. On her hotel balcony, Charlotte gazes at the silhouette of Sugarloaf across the moonlit water. Jerry steps slowly behind her. Startled, she turns and tenses.
How did you get here?
Along the balcony. My room is down there. The whole hotel has gone to bed.
So must I. It's disgracefully late.
Not by your Boston clocks.
He grabs her arm.
It's only a little before dinner in Boston, you know. Please don't yet.
She looks at his clutching hand.
Well, I'm not going to struggle with you.
That's right. No telling what sort of primitive instincts you might arouse.
He takes two cigarettes from his case.
Isn't it beautiful?
Gazing at the bay, he puts both cigarettes in his mouth, lights them, and passes one to Charlotte. He wears his wavy hair slicked back and his shirt collar open. She takes a long drag.
Do you believe in immortality?
I don't know. Do you?
I want to believe that there's a chance for such happiness to be carried on somehow, somewhere.
Are you so happy, then?
Close to it. Getting warmer and warmer, as we used to say as kids. Remember?
Look out or you'll get burned, we used to say.
Are you afraid of getting burned if you get too close to happiness?
Mercy, no. I'm immune to happiness and therefore to burns.
You weren't immune that night on the mountain.
Do you call that happiness?
Only a small part. There are other kinds.
Such as?
Having fun together. Getting a kick out of simple little things. Out of beauty like this. Sharing confidences you wouldn't share with anybody else in all the world.
She fixes a solemn gaze on the floor.
Charlotte. Won't you be honest and tell me that you are happy too? Since the night on the boat when you told me about your illness, I can't get you out of my mind. Nor out of my heart either. If I were free, there would be only one thing I want to do. Prove you're not immune to happiness. Would you want me to prove it, Charlotte? Tell me you would. Then I'll go.
With her eyes closed, she reluctantly faces him. He embraces her.
My darling, you are crying.
Oh, I'm such a fool. Such an old fool. These are only tears of gratitude. An old maid's gratitude for the crumbs off it.
Don't talk like that.
You see, no one ever called me darling before.
He presses his lips onto hers.
Let me go.
He kisses her again. Daytime at the airport.
I was lucky. I got them from a vendor outside.
He gives her a camellia bouquet.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Her eyes brimming with tears, Charlotte gazes at the fresh flowers and steps to a window overlooking the bay. Outside, the propellers of a docked seaplane spin. Jerry places two cigarettes in his mouth and lights them both. She wears a floral dress and a veiled hat. With the tears streaming down her cheek, she faces him. She takes a cigarette, holds it between her white-gloved fingers, and puffs. Through a haze of smoke, her heavy-lidded eyes gleam.
I hate goodbyes.
They don't matter. It's what's gone before.
No, it's what can't go after.
We may see each other sometime.
No, we promised. We are both to go home.
She looks away.
Will it help you to know I'll miss you every moment?
So will I, Jerry. So will I.
She kisses him passionately. She leaves.
Darling.
He follows.
Jerry.
Pulling her close, he kisses her again. As she steps away, he takes her hand. Their lips meet one last time. Charlotte hurries outside. Jerry rushes to the window and watches her pass. On the bay, the passenger seaplane skims along the ocean on its belly, streaming water in its wake. Jerry's gaze drops as the plane lifts off the water and soars toward the horizon. Now, in New York Harbor, a crowd waits on the dock by an ocean liner as passengers disembark. Charlotte's fashionable sister-in-law, Lisa, and her blonde daughter, June, study the travelers as they file off the ship.
What am I here for? That's what I want to know.
To be nice to Charlotte. Won't hurt you for once.
To be nice to Aunt Charlotte.
Yes.
Lisa spots Charlotte in a trim black suit and looks at June in amazement.
It's Charlotte!
Dumbfounded, June stares at her stylish aunt.
Well, here I am.
Charlotte! Lisa! Oh, I didn't see you, Charlotte.
Charlotte hugs Lisa, then kisses June.
Hello, June.
Hello.
Oh, this is Mr. Huneker. Two more veils for you, have, Mrs. and Miss.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Darling, I'm so glad you're back. Tell me all the news. Did you have a good trip?
I got your cable. Is Mother worse?
No.
Hamilton Huneker? The polo player?
Is that a question or an accusation?
Hello, you two. Hello, Mom. I've got to bustle along, but don't forget Glen Cove and the boat races.
Don't you mind it?
Be good, Ham. Say your prayers, Camille. Blessings both, and be sure I'm at the ceremony.
Up in Kansas City.
What ceremony?
Ham, there go the Ricketts. Wave goodbye.
Goodbye.
Ricketts.
Mother, pinch me.
I'm too busy pinching myself.
Ham, do you better go now?
I'll see you again soon.
I hope so.
He kisses her hand.
Is there anything else I can do?
No, thank you, Ham, very much.
Goodbye.
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 Goodbye. Well, we'd better get you to the customs.
Yes.
Come on, dear.
The McIntyres.
We thought we'd lost you. What a jam.
We're looking everywhere for you. We wanted to say goodbye.
Don't anybody say goodbye. Not anybody. Just au revoir. It is a sad time, isn't it? But I want to tell you one thing. There was no lady on this cruise that was as popular as you were.
Oh, thank you.
Au revoir.
Darling, we've got to run. Don't forget your promise right soon.
I promise I will, Deb.
Be sure now. Make a point of it.
Goodbye.
Say, what is this? Hellos, goodbyes, look me up, be sure.
Lisa, I wonder where my luggage is.
Well, there are the V's. Let's go have a look.
You
could knock me over with a feather.
Not with your weight, roly-poly.
Roly-poly, huh? And where did you get your new figure, Aunt Charlotte?
Well, I met a doctor in Rio who was very clever.
Keep quiet.
Hello, Daddy.
Hello, Johnny, my boy. How are you?
Charlotte, what's the program for today?
First, Dr. Jackwith. I cabled him to save me half an hour.
Going to tell him about your new boyfriend?
Which one?
June glances at her mother.
Cigarette, Aunt Charlotte?
Charlotte takes one.
Thank you. Here, cork tip. Make sure you get the right end.
Thanks for the instructions, roly-poly. How are you, June? I give up. And after Dr. Jackwith.
Back to Boston. I'm flying at 3. Back home.
I'll come with you.
Hello, Jerry.
Charlotte glances mistakenly at an old man.
June's staying in New York for a few days.
Not on your life, I'm not. I wouldn't miss the show for the world. I'm going to stand on the street corner and sell tickets.
Later, a black limousine pulls into the driveway of the Vale's Boston house. The chauffeur opens the door for Charlotte. Lisa leans out the window.
Wish me luck, Lisa.
You sure you don't want me to come in with you?
No, thank you. Oliver, take Mrs. Vale home and bring the bags up when you get back. See you tonight.
Good luck.
Goodbye.
Taking a deep breath, Charlotte rings the doorbell. The balding butler opens the front door.
Hello, William. Yes, William, it's me.
Welcome home, Miss Charlotte.
Thank you, William.
Your mother's waiting upstairs in her room.
Yes.
A nurse hurries downstairs.
I expect you're Miss Charlotte. Yes, I am. I heard the car and tried to get down before you rang. Pickford's my name. Dora, not Mary. I'm the nurse. Now, we better not stand here gabbing. She's got ears like a cat, and she heard that bell as sure as preaching. What's happened to Mother?
She's fit as a fiddle.
She has a heart. She denies it, but she has one. But then at her age, who wouldn't have? It's nothing serious. Ought to last her for years if she doesn't get excited.
How long has a nurse been necessary?
Well, I wouldn't say a nurse has ever been necessary. Mostly, she's used just to fetch and carry. There were 3 or 4 others before me, just in and outers. I lasted a whole month. Of course, she gave me the sack today, but that's because you're home.
Now, you'd better hurry right in because she'll be waiting. When she waits, she gets mad. When she gets mad, that means rush the smelling salts. I left her sitting in there all dressed for tonight's party. That is, except for a gown, just as cute as a little red wagon. If you need any help, I'll be on the floor above packing my duds. I'll see you later.
Dora heads upstairs. Charlotte steps briskly to the bedroom door, lays a hand on the knob, and stops. With a reminiscent gaze, she strokes her face.
Just remember that honoring one's parents is still a pretty good idea. You're going to be a shock to her. I advise you to soften the blow. Give her time to get used to you. Remember that whatever she may have done, she's your mother.
Charlotte enters the elegant bedroom and gazes at her mother sitting in an armchair near the window.
Well, Mother. Hello.
With a warm smile, Charlotte hurries across the room and kisses her mother on the cheek.
Mother, you're looking wonderfully well. Lisa told me you'd been ill, but I...
Lisa knows nothing about me. Step over there where I can see you.
Charlotte takes a few steps back.
Turn around.
She hesitates, then turns slowly left in a complete circle.
Walk up and down.
Her mother's accusing stare follows her as she obediently crosses the room. Removing a hat pin, Charlotte takes off her chic black hat and stands meekly. A sparkling brooch accents the ruffled blouse under her trim suit jacket.
It's worse than Lisa led me to suppose. Much worse.
If you'd like me to go, Mother.
Don't go. I have things to say to you. Sit down.
Charlotte crosses her legs gracefully as she sits in a chair.
I've asked a number of the family to dinner tonight at 7:30.
Lisa told me you had it. Very nice of you, Mother.
There'll be Lloyd and Rosa, Hilary and Justine, Lisa and June, Mr. Livingston, Uncle Herbert.
Do you mean Elliot Livingston?
Yes. I shall be wearing my white lace gown tonight. I'd like you to wear your black and white foulard.
But I've lost over 25 pounds. It won't fit.
Oh, yes, it will. I've had Miss Till here for the last week. Hilda is just Lisa's size. We've had all your dresses fitted to her. I've asked Miss Till to stay late tonight, in case there may be any minor alterations necessary.
Charlotte gets up, her face tightly calm, and walks to the bed.
You've thought of everything, haven't you, Mother?
She collects her stole, gloves, and hat.
Wait a minute. There's something else I want to say to you. Now that you're cured of whatever ailed you, and have come home to take up your duties as a daughter again, I've dismissed the last nurse. I've become used to having a room occupied on the same floor with me. And in view of my heart, I agree it is a wise precaution. You will occupy your father's room from now on. I had William move down all your things yesterday. Your furniture, books, and everything.
But, Mother, you had no right to move my things.
No right in my own house to move what I see fit.
Charlotte turns away.
I'm not surprised you blush. I was in the room when William took the books from the shelves. And let me say that what we found hidden there was a very great shock to me. I can only hope that a shameful episode in your life is completely past.
If you'll excuse me, Mother.
She opens the door.
I think if you wear your glasses tonight, you'll be less of a shock to the others. And take off whatever you've got on your face. As to your hair and eyebrows, you can say that often after severe illness, one loses one's hair, but you're letting yours grow as quickly as possible.
Charlotte opens her mouth to speak, then stops. Her agitated face eases, and she turns to leave the room. In the hall, she glances up the stairs to her old room on the third floor. She looks away and walks slowly across the landing to her father's room. Pushing open the door, she wanders into the room and gazes around at her furniture. Tables, chairs, a divan, and a thick-posted bed. Wearily, she tosses her things onto a chair. The old black-and-white foulard dress waits on the bed. Charlotte picks it up with distaste. Hilda, the maid, comes in carrying a package. She stares at Charlotte in disbelief.
Yes, Hilda, it's me. Welcome home, Miss Charlotte. This just came by air express from New York.
Thank you.
Miss Till is here about the dress. Do you want her in?
In a little while.
Yes, miss.
Hilda eyes her on the way out. Charlotte opens the small box and gazes down. She lifts out a corsage of three camellia blossoms. Charlotte smiles a bit, her soft eyes lost in a wistful, faraway gaze. Later, Charlotte gets dressed in her old room.
I'll get another blanket, miss, and I'll bring your clothes up just as soon as ever I get a chance.
No, thank you, Hilda. You needn't bother.
Yes, miss.
Charlotte's mother enters using her black cane.
What are you doing in this room?
I'm going to sleep here. Can we go?
Yes, ma'am.
Hilda ducks out.
Didn't you understand I wished someone to sleep on the same floor with me?
We can get one of the maids, Mother, or perhaps we can get the nurse back.
We? So long as I pay the bills, I'm running this house. Please remember you're a guest, Charlotte.
Well, if I am one, then please treat me like one, Mother. Your guest prefers to sleep in this room, if you don't mind.
This is no time for humor, as it so happens I do mind. Where did these flowers come from?
From New York. Who sent them? I've forgotten the name of the florist. I think it's on the box.
I've seen it. I had the box brought to me first. You know perfectly well what I mean. What person sent the flowers?
There wasn't any card.
In other words, you don't intend to tell me.
Charlotte ducks around the corner to change.
Mother, I don't want to be disagreeable or unkind. I've come home to live with you again here in the same house. But it can't be in the same way. I've been living my own life, making my own decisions for a long while now. It's impossible to go back to being treated like a child again. I don't think I'll do anything of importance that will displease you. But, Mother, from now on, you must give me complete freedom, including deciding what I wear, where I sleep, what I read.
Where did you get that dress?
Lisa and I bought it in New York today.
It's outrageous. Where's the black and white foulard?
I gave it to Miss Till. She was so grateful. Mother, please be fair and meet me halfway.
She pins on her corsage.
They told me before you were born that my recompense for having a late child was the comfort the child would be to me in my old age, especially if she was a girl. And on your first day home after 6 months' absence, you behave like this.
She turns for the door.
Mother, wait for me and I'll go down with you.
Thank you. I prefer to go down alone.
Charlotte's brow creases in disappointment. On the stairs, her mother pauses a few steps down and looks darkly back at Charlotte's room. She takes another step and falls, tumbling down to the landing. Charlotte runs down after her.
Hilda! Hilda, come here!
Mother, she fell all the way down the stairs.
Don't worry, go and get a doctor. There's one right down the street, Dr. Regan.
Later, Mrs. Vale lies in bed. The doctor wraps a bandage around her left ankle.
Is she conscious?
Well, if she isn't, this is the darndest torn ligament I've ever seen. It'll swell and discolor. She mustn't walk on it.
I feel responsible. We quarreled.
Charlotte, I believe there are dinner guests waiting downstairs. Or have you discarded your manners also? You may tell my family they may come up to see me, one or two at a time.
I think your mother's enjoying the excitement she's going to cause.
Must you whisper? I might have no attention at all.
Dora slips a thermometer into Mrs. Vale's mouth.
Oh.
Downstairs, Charlotte enters the drawing room.
Hello, everybody.
The relatives stare at Charlotte's elegant presence. June rushes up.
Oh, you look simply gorgeous. I just love your dress.
Thank you, June.
She moves to the others.
Hello, Aunt Hester. How are you?
Well.
By Jove. Uncle, Rosa, I'm glad to see you.
Shocked.
How you've changed. But you haven't, Lloyd, I'm happy to say. Justine.
I couldn't be more astonished.
Yes, it was a shock, wasn't it? But the doctor said it was only a torn ligament. You did mean Mother, didn't you?
Why, naturally she meant Mother.
Brother, dear.
She kisses him, then takes a drink.
Thank you, William.
Lisa comes up.
How'd it go?
I don't know, Lisa, but I think I won the first round.
Good.
Oh, by the way, do you know Elliot Livingston? How do you do?
How do you do? Tell me, why haven't we met before?
Well, the world is a small place, but Boston is a big one.
You're right, it is.
Let's have a fire.
You don't mean an open fire?
No, no, Charlotte. Mother won't like it.
Oh, that reminds me. She asked to have you come up by ones and twos. Uncle Herbert, you go first. You're the oldest.
For as long as I can remember, that fire has never been lit.
High time it was then, Lloyd.
Elliot offers matches.
Oh, thank you. Would you mind?
The tall, handsome Elliot smiles and holds her drink. As Charlotte lights the logs in the spotless fireplace, her relatives glance uncertainly at each other. Much later, she sees them out.
I had no idea you played bridge, Charlotte. Are you doing anything Wednesday for lunch and afterward? I'm sure to play, and if you think Mother would spare you.
Well, I'd love to, Justine, if you think I'd fit in.
I think you'd fit in anywhere. And furthermore, I think...
Please, no more, Justine, or I shall cry.
Justine kisses her cheek.
Good night.
Lisa comes to the door.
I'm proud. Dr. Jackwood would be too.
Good night, Lisa.
Good night, dear.
June smiles bashfully at Charlotte.
Can you ever forgive me?
Never.
They hug. Charlotte wipes a tear from her eye and turns to Elliot.
I still can't get over our not having met.
Well, as a matter of fact, we have. Once and almost twice.
I'm mystified.
Well, when we were children, you were the only boy who danced with me in dancing school. The almost is when you were supposed to usher at my coming out party and didn't show up.
I'm covered with shame.
I shouldn't have told you it wasn't nice.
Well, I hope you're going to allow me to make up for my past rudeness. May I telephone you sometime?
Of course, any time. Good night.
Good night.
Charlotte steps back inside to her uncle.
She wants to see you at once.
Yes, I know. Good night, Uncle. Good night.
And thank you for a most unusual evening.
Good night.
Charlotte climbs the stairs.
She wants to see you.
I know, at once.
She's had 2 hours sleep and she's bright as a button.
And mad.
Of course, she smelled the fire and sent Hilda to investigate. Now, if I were you, I'd just let her blow off her steam. I put 2 tablespoons of sherry and a sleeping powder in her hot milk so it shouldn't last long. I'll wait right outside the door.
Dora, I suspect you're a treasure.
Dora smiles gratefully. Charlotte enters her mother's bedroom, where the elderly matron sits propped up in her darkly veiled bed.
How's your ankle, Mother?
Extremely painful.
I'm so sorry. I've been doing some thinking as I've been lying here in pain, listening to you all having a good time downstairs. How much did that dress cost?
It was frightfully expensive. I'll tell you about it in the morning.
To whom did you charge it?
To whom? I've always charged my clothes, Mother.
And you expect me to pay for articles charged to me of which I do not approve?
Well, I could pay for it myself. I've saved quite a little money. I have about $5,000.
$5,000 won't last very long. Especially if your monthly allowance were to be discontinued.
Oh.
Charlotte sits on the bed.
Mother, I want to ask you something. When Father set up the trust for the two boys, why didn't he make one for me, too?
Because you were a mere child, and he wisely left your affairs to my own better judgment.
I'm sure you've always had everything in the world you want.
I haven't had independence.
That's it. That's what I want to talk about. Independence. To buy what you choose, wear what you choose, sleep where you choose. Independence. That's what you mean by it, isn't it?
Dr. Jackwith says that independence is reliance upon one's own will and judgment.
I make the decisions here, Charlotte.
Charlotte stands and turns away, her face downcast.
I'm willing you should occupy your old room until I dismiss the nurse. She will occupy your father's room for the time being and will perform a daughter's duties as well as a nurse's. That will give you a good chance to think over what I've said. I'm very glad to give a devoted daughter a home under my roof and pay all her expenses. But not if she scorns my authority.
Well, I could earn my own living, Mother. As a matter of fact, I've often thought about it. Make a very good head waitress in a restaurant, or
You may think that very funny, but I guess you'll be laughing out of the other side of your face if I did carry out my suggestion.
I don't think I would. I'm not afraid, Mother. I'm not afraid.
Charlotte faces her mother with a bright, clear-eyed gaze.
I'm not afraid, Mother.
Charlotte, sit down. I want you to know something I've never told you before. It's about my will. You'll be the most powerful and wealthy member of the Vale family, if I don't change my mind.
I advise you to think it over.
Where's Dora? I want Dora.
She bangs the wall with her cane. The nurse enters.
I want the back of my head rubbed, my ankle rebandaged, my pillows fixed, and another cup of that hot toddy.
Which first, Queen Elizabeth?
Head rubbed.
Dora leans her forward and props the pillow around her back. Charlotte watches as Dora massages Mrs. Vale's neck.
That's good. Don't stop. You're a good girl, Dora. A good, devoted girl. You wouldn't stick your nose up at a pot of gold, would you, Dora?
Talking absolute nonsense. Nobody's listening. Charlotte's gone to bed.
She glances at Charlotte, who takes the hint and leaves.
You're groggy, Granny, dear.
Later, Charlotte writes a letter in her room.
Dear Dr. Jackwith, summer, winter, now spring again. I won't say time flies, but it doesn't crawl as it used to. Between Mother and me, there is still an armed truce. She threatens, but she doesn't act. I follow your advice. I stick by my guns, but don't fire. There's a man here who's been nice to me. In fact, he's proposed to me, and there are no arguments I can think of why I shouldn't marry him. Most every woman wants a man of her own, a home of her own, and a child of her own. His name is Elliot Livingston. He's from a fine Boston family, and he's a fine man, too. A widower with two half-grown sons. I don't know why I tell you this, except I tell you almost everything.
Now, in her mother's room, Charlotte arranges a vase of newly arrived long-stem roses.
Of course, I can't force you to tell me whom they're from.
They're from Elliot.
Why haven't you accepted him? Do you imagine there's a Livingston waiting for you on every corner?
I've been waiting to see how you feel about it, Mother.
You know as well as I do that it makes no difference to you how I feel about it. You always do exactly as you please.
I think you're pleased.
I'm nothing of the kind. I'm only so astonished that you, of all the family, should bring such a feather to the family cap.
Then if you really do approve, Mother dear, why...
Oh, keep all that soft talk for Elliot.
Mother, there's no one like you. Come in.
Hilda.
Your flowers just came, miss.
Thank you.
Oh, and Mr. Livingston's waiting for you.
Oh, is he? Would you finish arranging the roses, Hilda?
Yes, miss.
Leave them here for Mother.
Don't wait up. Dinner and a concert.
I shall wait up. If I want to.
Charlotte takes her new camellia corsage and goes downstairs to meet Elliot.
Good evening, Charlotte.
Hello, Elliot. Wouldn't they let you sit down?
We're a little late. You look lovely.
Thank you. And for the roses, too. They're beautiful.
She pins the corsage on her coat.
And yet you wear camellias. Why do you always, Charlotte?
Just a personal idiosyncrasy. We're all entitled to them.
But you never let me buy them. Why don't you?
Aren't you full of questions?
And aren't you full of mystery?
Aye. Good night, William.
Good night. Good night.
Later, in their chauffeured car.
Charlotte, there are so many things about you I don't understand. You put me off, and you don't tell me why. I don't even know if you're thinking favorably or unfavorably.
Oh, favorably, Elliot. But, Elliot, there are so many things to think about. Taking over another woman's domain, her house, her sons.
You can redo the house. I'll build you a new one.
Oh. Elaine was such a wonderful person. Do you often think of her?
Well, yes. I want to be honest.
But you needn't be afraid that Elaine will ever come back in any way. She's just a memory now.
I'm sure she's much more substantial than that. You have her sons.
She thinks.
Now I have only a dried corsage, an empty bottle of perfume, and I can't even say his name.
I want to make you understand that I'll be beginning a new life with you and for you.
If we have a child, Elliot, I wonder which one of us it will resemble.
A child?
I've shocked you. But nevertheless, when I marry you, that'll be one of the chief reasons.
Well, whatever the reason, if only you'd...
I didn't say if, Elliot. I said when.
Later.
Have another cocktail.
Oh, I don't mind.
Oh, Charlotte.
Hello, darling, darling. Gracie. Elliot, you're
back.
Hello.
I know, Willie.
It was my fault. Hello, George.
The last, the best, we always say, Charlotte. Well, come on, let's find a cocktail. I'm two up on you.
I thought you
were. Let me see.
Hello.
I think we've got old fashions and martinis.
Thank
Which
you.
For you, huh?
Well, it doesn't really.
Yes, ma'am. Is he a ghost?
Charlotte stares across the room at Jerry.
No, I think I know the man who's talking to Hortense and Barbara.
Oh, J.D. Derns. Yes, he's doing a job for me, architect for the medical center. Nice chap, not Boston, you know. But all right, we've been trying to get him to dinner all winter. Oh, shall I tell him your name or let him guess?
We'll let him guess.
Right. J.D., here's someone who thinks she's met you before.
Jerry smiles.
Why, yes, of course. You do look familiar. Don't tell me your name, George. Wait a minute, I've got it. Beauchamp, isn't it? Camille Beauchamp.
I'm sorry, J.D., but this is not the same lady.
My name is Vale. I met you on a pleasure cruise once.
Oh, yes, Miss Vale. I hope you'll forgive me, I'm sure.
I shall leave you two alone to make your own peace.
Charlotte discreetly watches him go.
George tells me you've been in Boston very often this winter, Mr. Durrance. But I didn't know.
Yes, several times. You look simply glorious.
An architect. I could cry with pride.
Yes, it's an interesting job I'm doing for George. I wanted horribly to call you up.
The medical center, isn't it?
Yes. I walked by your house on Marlborough Street. Once I almost rang the bell.
A servant appears with drinks.
Thank you. Tell me about Deb and Mac. You introduced me to them on a pleasure cruise, remember?
They're all fine.
She struggles to smile.
How is Tina?
Jerry lights two cigarettes and hands her one. They each take a drag, gazing at each other through the smoke.
Well, Tina, we're having quite a bad time with Tina.
Tell me about it.
I'm afraid we've got to send her away somewhere. The doctor thinks she shouldn't be with her mother. I took her to see Dr. Jackwith. He was highly recommended to me by this Camille Beauchamp I mistook you for. Oh, Camille, I'm still horribly in love.
Well, come along, everybody. We'll simply have to dine now, or we'll never get to the concert.
Later that evening, the dinner guests attend an orchestral concert. Charlotte sits front center. The clean-shaven, sharp-featured Elliot sits to her left in a tuxedo. Jerry sits impassively to her right. Elliot pulls Charlotte's hand into his, interlacing their fingers. She gives him a brief, wan smile. When he turns back to the orchestra, her smile fades into sadness. She glances to her right and discreetly meets Jerry's intense gaze.
Come here. I must see you. May I come to your house tonight? I won't stay but 10 minutes. I must talk to you.
Yes, too.
Her smile subsides. She glances sidelong at the oblivious Elliot. Later, Charlotte comes home. Wearing a subdued smile, she crosses the entrance hall past a shiny black statue into the spacious drawing room. She glances out one of the tall windows. Light from the street filters in through gauzy curtains. Taking off her coat and gloves, Charlotte paces the shadowy room anxiously. Later, a mantel clock shows midnight. Charlotte waits anxiously in an armchair. She looks up. Hilda answers the phone.
Hello? Yes. What's the name, please?
Is that for me, Hilda?
Yes, miss.
Thank you. Hello?
Charlotte?
And Jerry, why didn't you?
I'm leaving tonight on the midnight.
But why?
I've got to get back on business. Mrs. Weston told me the news. You are engaged to marry her brother.
I wanted to tell you.
I just wanted to say that I thought he was a grand person. I hope you'll be very happy.
Jerry, where are you now? I've got to see you.
No, Charlotte, I think it best that we don't. Goodbye.
Charlotte's brow creases in distress. She strides away.
Hilda! Hilda! Call a taxi quickly, will you?
Later, at the Back Bay Railway Station, Charlotte hurries along the rain-slick platform.
I had to see you. I wanted to talk to you about Elliot.
Why are you marrying him? Do you love him?
Not like we do. Not like us. I thought it might grow to be, or something like it. I thought I was getting over you, Jerry. I didn't think I'd ever see you again. We'd made our pact and we were living up to it.
About Livingston? What sort of man is he?
Oh, like you in many ways. Oh, not your sense of humor, nor your sense of beauty, nor your sense of play. But a fine man, and a kind of refuge I thought I could never have. Oh, you're not angry with me.
No, only with myself. I was a cad to make you care for me, and then because of some noble sense of duty to leave you to get over it the best you can. And there's nothing I can do about it. Isabel depends on me more and more. She's ill and getting worse. There's Tina. And even if I could chuck everything, Charlotte...
But I wouldn't let you, Jerry. Jerry, what's the feminine for your word? That's what I am. I knew you were married, and I walked right in with my eyes wide open. But you said it would make you happier.
And it has. I've got back my work, and that's due to you.
I've been hoping you'd say that.
I have more understanding for Tina. I'm even kinder to Isabel. So don't blame yourself.
Then don't you.
It's different.
It's not. Shall I tell you what you've given me? On that very first day, a little bottle of perfume made me feel important. You were my first friend. And then when you fell in love with me, I was so proud. And when I came home, I needed something to make me feel proud. And your camellias arrived, and I knew you were thinking about me. Oh, I could have walked into a den of lions. As a matter of fact, I did, and the lions didn't hurt me. Please take back what you said.
Marry that man and have a full and happy life, I will.
I'll try.
All aboard!
They move to the train and gaze into each other's eyes.
I look for you around every corner. Goodbye, darling.
Goodbye, darling.
They embrace in a passionate kiss. They pull apart. Jerry steps onto the train as it starts to pull away. Charlotte follows, watching him through her tears. On her coat lapel, the petals of her camellia corsage have begun to wilt. Daytime in the Vale drawing room.
You know where we'll be 2 weeks from today? We'll be on the ocean, 2 days off San Francisco.
They sit close on a couch.
That's so soon, Elliot. I do want to be sure.
She looks down awkwardly, then forces a smile.
You know what I'd like?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like you to take me to some bohemian restaurant for dinner some night. We could be very gay, have cocktails and champagne, and you could make love to me, and...
He lifts his arm from her shoulder and stares, perplexed. She gets up.
Well, what I mean is... If I could just get rid of some of my... inhibitions. Just for once, I might have more confidence.
Time will give you confidence.
It's not what I mean, Elliot.
Well, what do you mean, Charlotte?
She sits near him on a small bench.
I read a novel once about a woman, a very repressed woman.
She was in an automobile accident with a man. It was a very cold night. He gave her a drink to keep her warm. And because of the drink, she lost her inhibitions. You see, she was just...
She looks down, avoiding his pensive gaze.
I'm afraid I sound very depraved.
Charlotte stands again and moves away. She turns to face him.
Ellie!
They both smile.
I wonder if we're both going to say the same thing.
About our trip, if you like, I can exchange the 2 tickets for 3 and take the boys.
Would you?
Certainly.
Charlotte, I've been thinking about us.
Yes?
Perhaps we wouldn't be happy.
We wouldn't be, Elliot. You ought to marry someone who would enjoy what you enjoy. Let's not linger over it, Elliot.
They walk out together.
Well, I suppose you'll meet somebody sometime.
No, I don't think I'll ever marry. Some women just aren't the marrying kind. But you'll meet someone. Thank you for thinking it was me. I had that on my record anyway.
They stop at the front door.
Do I kiss you goodbye?
Oh, no, let's not. It isn't really goodbye. We'll see each other again, won't we?
Of course we will. Well, goodbye till we meet again.
Goodbye till we meet again.
She smiles briefly and opens the door. Elliot walks out. Later, Charlotte slowly climbs the wide staircase.
It's like the time when my father died. His breathing just stopped. All over. Finished. Ended forever. You fool. Oh, you fool. Now you'll never have a home of your own, or a man of your own, or a child of your own.
Charlotte pauses on her way to the third floor, her full-lidded eyes heavy in sorrow. She steps to her mother's room and enters as Hilda leaves with a lunch tray.
Hello, Mother.
Charlotte sits in a rocking chair.
I thought Elliot was staying for lunch. What's his hurry today?
Mother, Elliot and I have broken our engagement.
What did you say?
I said Elliot and I have broken our engagement.
Why have you done that?
Because I don't love him.
Have you no sense of obligation to your family or to me? Here you have the chance to join our name, Vale, with one of the finest families in the city, Livingston. And you come in here and tell me that you're not in love. You're behaving like a romantic girl of 18.
I don't doubt it.
And what do you intend to do with your life?
Get a cat and a parrot and live alone in single blessedness.
Stop rocking. You've never done anything to make your mother proud. Or to make yourself proud either. Why, I should think you'd be ashamed to be born and live all your life as Charlotte Vale. Miss Charlotte Vale.
Dr. Jackwith says that tyranny is sometimes expression of the maternal instinct. If that's a mother's love, I want no part of it.
I didn't want to be born. You didn't want me to be born either. It's been a calamity on both sides.
Charlotte crosses the room. Her mother gapes, then slumps in her seat with a stricken grimace.
Oh, Mother, let's not quarrel. We've been getting along together so well lately. It was a horrid...
She approaches her mother.
...thing to say.
Charlotte stares down disbelievingly at her lifeless mother. Turning, she runs for the door.
Dora!
She rushes into the hall.
Dora! We quarreled. I did it.
She leans against a wall as the nurse goes into the bedroom.
I did it.
Later, an attorney reads the will.
I did it.
To these household servants who were still serving me at the time of my death, I bequeath to each of the above mentioned the sum of $3,000. And all the rest, residue and remainder of my estate, real, personal, or mixed, I give, devise, and bequeath to my beloved daughter, Charlotte Vale.
I did
Later, it. On a train.
I did it. I did it. I did it. I never did anything to make my mother proud. I must see Dr. Jackwith.
Oh, Jerry. Jerry, where are you now when I need you so much?
Nighttime at the Cascade Sanitarium. Windows glow brightly as Charlotte's car pulls up. A shaggy dog meets her in the cozy common room.
Hello, Scooter. Hello, Scooter. Do you remember me?
Do you?
Miss Trask.
Well, look who's here.
Hello. Well, for goodness sake, I hardly know you.
Charlotte glances at herself.
Oh, of course. I was about to send the police for you. The doctor wired you were coming.
It's been a very long drive. I'm tired. Do you suppose I could go to my room right away?
Why, of course you can. I put you in room 18. That's your old room, remember? I thought it would make you feel more at home.
Thank you.
How's Jackman?
Same as ever, handing out common sense instead of sympathy.
No.
Could Samson get my bags?
Of course. Samson, get Miss Vale's bags out of her car.
At the foot of the stair, Charlotte pauses and gazes at a young girl sitting at a nearby table. With stringy long hair and wire-rimmed glasses, the girl stares glumly at an unfinished jigsaw puzzle. Charlotte comes over.
How's it coming?
All right.
What's it supposed to be?
I don't know.
Charlotte fits a puzzle piece into its place.
Here's the little girl's other slipper. Do you mind if I join you?
Charlotte pulls up a chair.
What's the title of the picture? Oh, The Proposal. I'll collect all the pink pieces. That is, if you don't mind. Of course, some people prefer to do a puzzle alone.
I know who you are.
You do? Who am I?
You're my new nurse.
No, I'm not. You're quite wrong.
You can't fool me. And I know why you've come here. To make sure I don't run away from this place again.
Oh, did you run away from here once? I didn't know.
She glances at the homely girl.
What's your name?
You know my name. That's why you stood there and stared at me.
Oh, that was very rude of me. But you see, you reminded me of somebody.
Who?
Well, if you must know, myself. Of course, at your age. You're about 14, aren't you?
I'm 12. Nearly 13.
Oh, there you are. Christine, your schedule called for you to spend the evening with the young people next door.
They don't want me.
Oh, nonsense. Of course they want you. But I'll bet they want you a lot more if you just make a little effort yourself. I've got a fine ping-pong game all fixed up for you. Barbara and Betty against you and Bob.
But he's the best player here.
Well, of course he is. That's why you're going to be his partner, to make the match more even.
Oh, but I'll be the worst one. I'll die. I'll just die.
Oh, you do nothing of the sort. Don't dramatize, Christy.
Oh, please, please, please. Don't make me. Don't make me. Oh, don't make me.
Oh, don't make her. But the doctor wants Christine to have exercise in the evening. And I'm here to see...
I'll see that she has some exercise. I have to take my car down to the town and leave it at the garage to be washed. Christine could go with me. We'll walk back or run, if you like. That is, if Christine would be kind enough to go with me. Would you?
Christine gazes wonderingly at Charlotte. Braces glint between her parted lips. She gives Miss Trask a nervous look, then turns back.
I'm sorry, Christine.
Oh, please let me go with this lady. I promised to drink all my cocoa tonight, if you will.
For goodness sake, Christine, don't carry on.
Miss Trask smiles a bit.
Go get your coat.
Christine hurries off.
I'm sorry, Trask. I couldn't help it.
I thought you were too tired to do anything but just crawl into bed.
I guess Cascades has performed another miracle on me. Tell Christine I'll be right down. I'm going upstairs.
By the way, Christina's room is right next to yours, so you'll share the same bathroom. Don't be disturbed if you hear her crying. She has spells of it. Just ignore it. It's one of her little tyrannies, like refusing to eat. Just ignore that, too. Only if you could manage to get a little food into it tonight, it would help.
I'll try.
Later in a shop, Christine slumps in a chair and reluctantly tastes a spoonful of ice cream.
How long have you been at Cascades?
10 days. Nearly 11.
Don't like it much, do you?
No.
Neither did I at the end of 10 days. The first 2 weeks are the worst.
I shall never like it.
Do you want to go home?
No.
Where do you want to go?
I don't know. My mother doesn't want me at home. That's why it's helping Father for me to be here.
Where were you headed when you ran away?
For a telephone booth in town to put in a reverse call to my daddy.
To ask him to come and get you?
No.
promised him I'd stay here for 2 weeks. I just wanted to hear Daddy's voice again. I'm almost sure my father's dying.
Is he sick?
They won't let me speak to him, so I don't know.
She buries her face in her hands.
Listen, Christine. There's the telephone booth. And here's my change purse. Do you think your father will be home tonight?
Christine looks up at her.
You mean I can call him now?
That's exactly what I mean, go ahead.
Christine goes over, then comes back.
Help me, will you please? I'm not sure I can run it.
Charlotte slips off her coat.
Of course.
Leading Christine into the glass-walled phone booth, she picks up the flared earpiece and inserts a coin into the phone slot.
Number, please.
Long distance, please.
Long distance.
I want to put in a person-to-person call to...
Jeremiah DeVoe Derrance, Mount Vernon 2940.
Charlotte smiles.
To Mr. Jeremiah DeVoe Derrance, Mount Vernon 2940.
2940?
Yes, thank you.
Deposit 50 cents, please.
Charlotte takes two quarters from her change purse and drops them in.
All of that?
Now, in Jerry's study.
Hello? Yes?
Charlotte pauses on the verge of speech.
Hello, hello?
Her expression hardens. She hands the earpiece to Christine.
Hello? Hello, Daddy?
Jane. Anything wrong?
Oh, hello, Daddy. Are you all right?
Charlotte returns to the table.
Oh, Daddy, I just wanted to hear you speak to me. When are you coming up to see me? I'm so lonesome here. Why can't you come tomorrow? But, Daddy, you promised.
Later.
Yes, I remember. Goodbye.
Christine grins as she hangs up and leaves the booth.
Oh, thank you for letting me call him. Thank you, thank you. Oh, I'd like to finish my ice cream now.
Oh, I think we'd better have some fresh. Would you bring us two more vanillas, please?
Oh, but I'll owe you so much. Daddy said I'm to pay you back. He wanted to know who was letting me call him, and all I could say was a nice light lady, and that I'd write to him tomorrow and tell him your name. What is your name, please?
Don't you think secrets are fun? Just refer to me as the nice light lady. It sounds so mysterious. Look here, I wouldn't tell Miss Trask about the phone call. Might get me in wrong.
Oh, no, nor Dr. Bryans, nor Dr. Jacqueline. I won't tell a single living soul. Oh, I'd sooner sicken and die than put you in the wrong.
Tina, really?
You called me Tina.
Did I? How stupid of me. But then it is a nickname for Christina, isn't it?
Yes, but nobody calls me that now except my daddy.
Well, I won't then.
No, please. I want you to call me Tina.
They smile at each other over fresh bowls of ice cream. Later. In her room, Charlotte puts on her dressing gown and goes through the connecting doorway into Tina's room. Tina huddles in bed underneath her blanket as Charlotte crosses the shadowy bedroom and closes the window. She sits on the edge of the bed.
It's I, Tina. Don't be afraid. What's the matter?
She pulls back the blanket. Tina throws herself into Charlotte's arms.
Tina.
Charlotte hugs her tightly.
Tina.
Don't leave me. Don't leave me.
I won't go to sleep. Tell me, what's the matter?
I'm ugly and mean. And nobody likes me.
Tina, you?
I'm not pretty in the least. You know I'm not.
Well, whoever wants that kind of prettiness, Tina? There's something else you can have if you earn it. A kind of beauty.
What kind?
Something that has nothing to do with your face. A light that shines from inside you because you're a nice person. Think about it. Someday you'll know I'm right.
Will they like me then?
Who are they?
Everybody. All the kids at school, Miss Trask and the nurses and the doctors. Oh, there must be something awfully wrong with me.
Do you like them, Tina? The kids at school and Miss Trask and the nurses and the doctors?
No, I hate them.
That's something else you've got to grow up with.
If you want people to like you, you've got to like people. That's why Miss Trask asked you to cooperate. And that's what Dr. Jackwith means when he tells you to play the game.
I bet you're only fooling me.
You try it and see. In the meantime, if it'll help you any, I like you. I think you're very pretty. Very sweet.
She kisses Tina's forehead.
All right.
All right. Why are you so good to me?
Because somebody was good to me once when I needed somebody. Now go to sleep. Close your eyes and let your muscles go all limp. That's better. I'll tell you a story. Once upon a time, there was a little girl who was afraid. A little girl, Tina, who was afraid because she thought she was alone.
Hours later, Tina sleeps calmly. Charlotte lies awake beside her.
This is Jerry's child in my arms. This is Jerry's child clinging to me.
Daytime. Charlotte and Tina play tennis. Dr. Jackwith watches them.
Impertinent. Upsetting rules. Thinks she can run the works.
On the sunny court, Tina makes a bad shot. The doctor waits.
I want to talk to you.
Who, me?
Yes, you.
I thought you might. Here you go, Tina.
She hits her the ball. Tina, her hair in pigtails, watches them tensely as they walk away.
I hear you're running Cascade now.
Dr. Jack.
You give orders to my doctors, you give orders to Miss Trask.
I didn't give orders, I requested.
I thought you came up here to have a nervous breakdown.
Well, I've decided not to have one. It's all the same to you.
Well, then, since you're no longer my patient, since you become a member of my staff, Doctor.
I know I've been impertinent.
Oh, go ahead. Maybe I like it.
It's just that the child is so unhappy here. I don't think she's being treated wisely. I used to be proud of you. This time I'm ashamed.
Then isn't it wonderful that you know so much better?
I have a proposition to make to you. I haven't anything to do with my time. Mightn't I be the nurse instead? I promise not to do anything again without asking your permission first. If only
I've already canceled the nurse. Just go ahead. Tell me what you do.
Stay with her. Pay attention to her. Make her feel wanted and important. And just as soon as you said we could, I'd take her camping in the woods. She adores camping.
Sounds like a wonderful break for her.
Of course, I couldn't do it without her parents' permission. I wouldn't. What would her mother say, do you suppose?
Oh, she'd accept any plan that would relieve her of the child who's always been a thorn in her flesh, though the lady would strongly protest if she heard me say so.
And her father, what would his attitude be?
Sympathetic and protective. Possibly too protective for Christine's good. Result, resentment felt by the mother. The child's absence from home became desirable for all concerned, so I brought her here. I was highly recommended to the father by a friend of his. But of course he placed the child in my care, not in yours.
I suppose I'd better ask you something. How much do you know about South America?
Well, geographically...
No, that's not what I mean. About my automobile accident and the man who was with me. He told me in New York that he led me from one difficulty into another.
A patient of mine who has a phobia about high places told me about an accident happening to a man and woman in Brazil when she was there. She knew the woman's name and not the man's. In fact, she told me the woman's name before I could stop her.
And who told you the man's?
Nobody. I don't know his name.
Then you didn't know that Christine's father and I had met before.
No, I didn't know. And if I had known, I wouldn't have suggested your coming to Cascade at present. I had no idea you'd ever even met Durrance.
Then that alters the whole situation. But you just admit...
I don't know anything about your relationship with Durrance. I don't know how emotionally involved you are with him. I can't work in the dark when there's a child in the picture.
I'll tell you everything. It's over. That's it in two words. And Tina needs me just as much now as she did a minute ago. And I've never been needed before.
Well, I'm crazy, but if you promise to behave yourself...
I'll tell her.
But you're only on probation. Remember what it says in the Bible. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away.
How does it feel to be the Lord?
Not so very wonderful since the free will bill was passed. Too little power.
Later, in the phone booth.
And I'm not going to have a nurse. And
just going to have her. She'll be my... What are you?
Your friend.
Yes, she's going to be my friend. I can tell you her name now. She said I could. It's Miss Vale. No, not the kind you wear on your face. But V-A-L-E. And she's from Boston. Oh, and she's ever so nice. What's that, Daddy? He said to tell you thank you. Would you like to talk to him?
No, thank you.
She won't talk to you. I think she's quite shy. You know something, Daddy? Pretty soon when the doctor says it's all right, she's going to take me away. Camping. Just her and me.
Now the two friends ride in a wood-paneled station wagon. Later, they go fishing.
I think I've got a trout!
I think I have one, too!
Later still, they chase one another through sun-dappled woods. In a montage sequence, their car zooms along a curving road. They go canoeing on a lake among forested hills. The car odometer shows over 300 miles traveled. At night, the two friends sleep outside under the stars. Tina's hand rests on Charlotte's blanketed shoulder. In the morning, Tina cooks potatoes over a campfire.
Miss Vale!
What's cooking?
Potatoes, and they're cooked.
They smell good.
What have you been doing?
Writing a letter.
Is it a secret?
Do we have secrets, Tina? As a matter of fact, I was writing a letter to Dr. Jackwith. See if I could keep you with me for a while longer. When I go back to Boston in the fall, I'd like to take you home with me. Would you like that?
Why, I'd love it. It'll be just like playing house.
She hands Charlotte a hot potato.
Ooh. Oh, Tina.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
She kisses Charlotte's palm and gazes at her.
Are you old enough to be my mother?
Good heavens, Tina, of course I am.
I wish you were my mother.
No, you don't, Tina. You mustn't even think that.
But you're not like most mothers. You don't tell me what to do and what not to do all the time. I wish I didn't have to call you Miss Vale. It sounds as if we didn't know each other very well.
Well, would you like to call me some nickname? A sort of special name of our own? As if we were kind of chums?
I'd love it. What sort of a name?
Well, there are all sorts of abbreviations for Charlotte. You could call me Carlotta, or Charlie, or Auntie, or Tante, or a name I was called once in fun, Camille, or even Aunt Charlotte.
I guess I'll call you Camille. It's kind of a funny name, though.
Charlotte gazes wistfully. Nighttime in Boston. A cab pulls up the drive of Charlotte's manor. Jerry and the pipe-smoking Dr. Jackwith get out.
Ever been in this house before?
No, I haven't.
It's a gloomy old bar. How anyone can bear to live in it is more than I know.
Tina writes me she lives here like a princess in a palace.
Yes. Well, I suppose it feeds her starved sense of self-importance.
The butler, William, opens the door.
Good evening.
Good evening.
William takes their coats and hats.
I thought you said gloom. I'm amazed.
In the living room, stylishly dressed young men and women laugh and chat around the fireplace as they roast weenies. June spots the visitors.
Here, hold this for me, will you?
Handing off her weenie stick, she hurries into the entrance hall.
Hello there. Welcome, Dr. Jackwith. Remember me?
Who could forget you? This is Mr. Dorrance, Tina's father.
Oh, how do you do?
How do you do? Hey, what goes on here?
We're roasting weenies.
Roasting weenies?
Uh-huh, they make small canopies. Come on, I'll introduce you to my gang and you can roast too. You too, Tina's father.
Tina appears at the top of the stairs.
Dave!
Walk down slowly, darling, and you'll trip on your dress.
In a frilly white dress, Tina starts down daintily, then hurries the rest of the way.
Daddy!
She rushes into his arms.
Oh, Daddy!
Her hair is swept up in tight curls. Tears of joy fill her shining eyes as they hug.
Can this be Tina?
Do I look nice? It's my first party dress.
You look lovely.
Do you really like me?
She gazes into his eyes. Jerry hugs her and gazes up at Charlotte.
I love you.
Charlotte smiles graciously.
Tina,
Don't you think it would be nice to show your father your room and your studio and everything?
Would you like to see my room, Daddy?
Very much, if Miss Vale will pardon us.
How long are you going to call her Miss Vale?
What should I call her?
I don't know. Would it sound too funny if Daddy should call you my name for you? Camille?
I think it would sound very nice indeed. Don't keep him too long, will you, Tina? June has some very special canapés for you.
A wide grin lights up Tina's delicate round face as she leads her father upstairs. In the drawing room, couples dance as Charlotte studies blueprints with Dr. Jackwith. A woman brings them plates of weenies.
Oh, thank you, Louise.
Wonderful.
What are you going to call this wing?
I ought to name it after you, since it's your interest and time and money that made it possible. I'm putting you on the board of directors. You knew I would, didn't you?
How nice of you.
She takes a bite.
I thought that this petition was going to be over here.
She catches Jackwith gazing at her with a faint smile.
What are you looking at, Dr. Owl?
I'm just wondering. You the same woman who a few months ago had no single interest in the world?
No.
Well, I showed him everything, and now he's gone into the library.
Oh.
Charlotte gets up.
Take care of Dr. Jackwith.
That's a funny thing to tell me. How do you take care of a doctor? A doctor's supposed to take care of you.
Have a chip.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Jackwith.
Charlotte enters the library.
Jerry, what are you doing in here all alone?
I've decided to take Tina home.
Take her home?
But...
Charlotte closes the library door and strides over to Jerry.
But you can't. What do you mean? Dr. Jackwith says it would be the worst possible thing for Tina to go home now. Surely he's told you that we have to wait until she's physically fit before we can treat her like a normal girl again.
I don't care what he says. No self-respecting man would allow such self-sacrifice as yours to go on indefinitely.
Why, Jerry, that's the most conventional, pretentious, pious speech I ever heard in my life. I simply don't know you.
I can't go on forever taking from you and giving nothing, darling.
He sits down, his features hard.
Oh, I see. Oh, forgive me, Jerry, it's your pride. Let me explain. You will be giving. Don't you know that to take is sometimes a way to give? The most beautiful way in the world if two people love each other. You'll be giving me Tina. Every single day I'll be taking and you'll be giving.
It's very kind of you to put it that way.
Well, then is it something that Tina has said? Don't you think she's happy here?
Happy? She confessed to me upstairs she thought she loved you almost as much as she loves me.
Well, what is the reason? Is it something about us?
Of course it's about us. What else could it be?
Jerry rises abruptly and moves away. Charlotte follows him to a grand piano where he stands with head bowed and jaw clenched.
I wish you'd tell me what it is.
Why didn't you marry Livingston? I tell you why. Because I came along and ruined him for you. And now my child comes along and claims all your attention and takes your whole life when you should be trying to find some man who'll make you happy.
Some man who'll make me happy.
She turns away.
Oh, so that's it. So that's it. Well, I've certainly made a great mistake. Here I have been laboring under the delusion that you and I were so in sympathy, so one, that you'd know without being asked what would make me happy. And you come up here to talk about some man. Apparently you haven't the slightest conception of what torture it is to love a man and to be shut out, barred out, to be always an outsider. An extra.
Charlotte, let me...
Why, when Tina said she wanted to come home and stay with me, well, it was like a miracle happening. Like having your child, a part of you. And I even allowed myself to indulge in the fancy that both of us loving her and doing what was best for her together would make her seem actually like our child after a while. But I see no such fancy has occurred to you. Again, I've been just a big sentimental fool. It's a tendency I have.
He holds her in his arms.
Wait a minute. I was afraid you were keeping Tina out of pity. But there was no note of pity in your ridicule of me just now. Now I know you still love me. And it won't die what's between us. Do what we will. Ignore it. Neglect it. Starve it. stronger than both of us together.
Please let me go.
Charlotte.
He pulls her close for a kiss.
Please let me go.
Held in a loose embrace, she gazes steadily at him, her face tensely calm. Jerry turns away and wanders to an open window. Charlotte winces tearfully, then composes herself and approaches him.
Jerry, Dr. Jackwith knows about us. When he said I could take Tina, he said, you're on probation. Do you know what that means? It means that I'm on probation because of you and me. He allowed this visit as a test. And if I can't stand such tests, I'll lose Tina. And we'll lose each other. Jerry, please help me.
Tears spill down Charlotte's cheeks as he turns to face her.
Shall we just have a cigarette on it?
Yes.
She picks up a box of cigarettes and holds it out to him. He and Charlotte gaze at each other with tender smiles as he slips two cigarettes in his mouth, lights them, and hands one to her. Staring into each other's eyes, they exhale. Their smoke mixes and tumbles into the night air. Charlotte turns to the open window and looks out into the night. Jerry follows with a gentle smile.
May I sometimes come here?
Whenever you like. It's your home, too. There are people here who love you.
They look at you and Tina, share with you peace. Contentment.
Of course. And just think it won't be for this time only. That is, if you will help me keep what we have. If we both try hard to protect that little strip of territory that's ours. We can talk about your child.
Our child.
Thank you.
And will you be happy, Charlotte?
Jerry, don't let's ask for the moon. We have the stars.
Our view glides past the couple to the trees outside and up to the twinkling stars of the night sky. Fade to black. A title card appears. The End. A Warner Brothers First National Picture.